Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are finally seeing signs of spring. The glacier covering most of our state is slowly beginning to melt. And it's been a while since we've had a winter this cold and this snowy for this long. As things begin to melt, wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here to take stock of how a winter like this one affects the wildlife in our state. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Charity. Have you got a fire in the fireplace over there this morning?
I wish that we did, and I'm readying my arc.
Yes, absolutely.
Things are icy in Johnson County, I can tell you that.
I think it is time for those yak tracks or whatever you have out there.
My wife was
taking feeders back out this morning. I was slipping and sliding on the yard, and it's definitely an icy one right now.
Absolutely. Well, so Jim, I mean, this has been a very cold, snowy, long winter.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
animals in Iowa are acclimated to our climate. They have adaptations that help them live through winters like this one. But this one has been particularly harsh, right?
Yeah, it's been a very strange winter. When you think about the temperatures, if you look back into November, November got very cold very quickly after a very pleasant fall. And then December, you know, was pretty open and much warmer. January was kind of up and down, and
it started quite warm and lovely. I remember.
Yes, it did, and then all of a sudden, along comes February, and we get snowstorm after snowstorm, a couple of polar vortex, you know,
right,
those Arctic blasts coming down and taking our temperatures down well below zero Fahrenheit, and it's been a pretty solid month of a very cold, very heavy snow, and now we're moving into a time. Actually, this month is the toughest month, I think, of all, because of the winter, or potentially tough, because you do have this ice, so it's sealing off lots of things. You have lots of rain. You've got lots more critters coming back, and nothing blooming yet, you know,
right,
to provide a lot of, in fact, I'm a beekeeper, and this is the month in which bees starve very often, is that they make it through the toughest part, what we thought was the toughest part of winter, and all of a sudden there's nothing out there, and they're out flying when it gets above 50 degrees, and then all of a sudden there's no food out there. So we've still got a ways to go, but there are some signs, as we'll talk about a little later in the program, there are some signs of spring. So.
The snowpack is something that has been different this winter, although I think a lot of us remember long, snowy Iowa winters from our youth with that snowpack throughout. But when there is a heavy snowpack, that's one of the things that can make winter really challenging for some of the wildlife that are visible to us, the ones that we can see, right?
Yeah, the ones above the snow are a tough one. And certainly, if you look at it, depends where you are in Iowa, where as a listener, if you're in some parts of the state where there isn't as much snow, you think, well, it seems pretty average. And in other parts of the state, particularly northern Iowa and northeastern Iowa, you have a lot of snow for a long period of time. I think at one point we had, it's certainly packed down now, but we had about 15, 16 inches sitting on the ground for much of the month of February. And that can be very difficult, particularly for critters that have to wade through the snow. As a result, things like deer and some parts of the state may have yarded up, meaning that they have stayed in one small area in order to kind of conserve energy. And you'll often have a bunch of deer in one woodlot that stay there for many, many days and don't go very far. As a result, they're certainly more subject to potential predation, as does happen farther north into Wisconsin, Minnesota, the potential some starvation. We certainly have seen evidence that it has been difficult on deer.
Evidence on Horticulture Day. We're certainly getting a lot of phone calls about damage from deer and from rabbits this winter.
Yeah, they're coming right up next to houses, and you're seeing them at times of the day in which they're usually much more prone to be in cover. Same thing with rabbits. I've been seeing rabbits in the last couple of weeks out along roadways where they've come a long ways from any sort of cover in the middle of the day feeding, and that's very unusual because that makes them subject to a lot of potential predation from hawks and owls and coyotes and all kinds of things. So cars,
domestic dogs.
Yeah. So that sort of behavior says, "Wow, they're hungry." A deer can dig down through the ice a little bit. Much more so than rabbits. Rabbits tend not to dig very much, so they have what's above the snow line. And if you begin to look around in your woodland or wherever, a lot of the potential food seems to be covered up by the deep snow. So it can be a very tough time for them.
What are some of the other critters that we see out and about this time of year? And through the winter months, I mean, we do see the deer and we see the rabbits. There are birds as well that are dealing with this kind of cold.
Yeah, and what happens if the cover and the habitat is good? Obviously, they'll do just fine. However, very heavy snows tend to weigh down some of the grasses and other things. This is one of the reasons that I was looking just over the weekend at a prairie plot near my house, and those clumps of prairie grasses are still standing up straight in the heavy snow and all the wind we've had and everything. They're still standing above the snow. That's why they're much better than some of the non-native grasses that have gotten planted, the brome and the fescues that get weighted down very quickly, and so that those seeds on the seed heads are not available to birds in the wintertime. So the prairie things have adapted over the millennia and do very well with heavy snows, whereas some of the non-native things don't. So it depends what your habitat is like. If you have a lot of native grasses and other plants, they're going to stand up fairly well and still have seeds available for birds. Things like pheasants, though, pheasant and quail, I know in some parts of the state, including here in central Iowa, I've gotten lots of reports of pheasants coming right up to the bird feeders in great numbers, in fact, and feeding on the ground beneath the feeders looking for anything. A friend of mine here has over 100 pheasants in his yard on a daily basis.
Wow.
It's amazing. So,
So in some ways, this winter has made critters that we don't normally see a whole lot more visible.
Yeah, it has. If the snow or the ice has weighted down some of the things that they are looking for, it's tough for them to, they can't dig down through the snow. Even turkeys, I've been seeing turkeys out in the middle of fields, of cornfields that are not fall plowed, still trying to scratch down through, and it gets tough for them when that ice starts to form like it has in the last few days. We get that melt during the day, and then it freezes at night, and it's very difficult for them to scratch down through that.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about some of the underground critters, the ones that sleep through this, or at least disappear through most of this. How do they fare in a winter like
this? There are some long sleepers, things like raccoons, possums, chipmunks, even tree squirrels. They can do fairly well. In fact, the heavy snow cover, depending on what kind of a cavity they might be in, has provided some insulation. I was getting some wood off my wood pile late last week and uncovered a part of the wood pile that I hadn't been in all winter, and there was a big pile of leaves in there, and I kind of pulled some of the leaves out and uncovered several possums that were sleeping, and they were like, "Come on! on, it's cold in here, you know. So they rolled over, and I put leaves back in, and I think they'll be just fine. But I had previously removed the snow cover off the top and kind of regretted doing that because it uncovered some of their insulation. And squirrels, if they have a good cavity, tree squirrels, if they have a good cavity in a tree, they're likely to sleep a little longer than squirrels that just have some of these leaf nests. They have to get out and feed because they have to recharge their furnaces. So they've been very, very much more active than you would usually expect. Now, things under the snow that are traditionally under the snow, things like mice and ground squirrels and voles, they probably done better this winter because of the snow cover. Depending on how deep the frost goes, and that's a real question, because we did have that cold spell in, pretty solid cold spell in November. I think the frost, without any snow cover, I think the frost may have gone down a little farther than it usually does. And that may impact things like 13-line ground squirrels. That some gardeners and certainly some farmers would not be unhappy to see them see the demise of more of the ground squirrels. But these little 13-line ground squirrels or squinnies or grinnies or whatever you might call them in different parts of the state. There are, by the way, something like 21 common names that I know of for the same critter, depending on where you are in the state, some of which we can't repeat on the air. So that's, they're hibernators. They're true hibernators. Those and the groundhogs are both true hibernators. And depending on how deep the frosts go, they may not survive the winter because the frost may go beyond them where they've dug for the winter, and they may not wake up enough to dig a little deeper. So, you know, it depends on that frost depth, and we don't know that. But certainly the mice and voles and that stay active under the snow, they've had a good winter, I think, because of the snow cover.
I'm glad somebody's been enjoying it. I know a few humans that have loved it as well.
Right. So. Good skiing and sledding.
Exactly, exactly. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and we're taking stock of how a harsh, long, snowy, cold, windy winter affects the wildlife in our state. You are welcome to join our conversation as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me this hour, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. Things are beginning to melt, but it has been a long, cold, snowy winter, and we're taking stock of how a winter like this one affects wildlife in Iowa. And Jim, we were talking just before the break about those creatures that live underground during the winter months and how this has probably been a better winter for them than some recent ones in some significant ways.
We think so, anyway.
Right? I mean, we'll probably find out later when they turn in their journals.
Right.
But I have to say, a couple of weeks ago, we had a Saturday that was above freezing, and it rained all day, all day long. And I was driving in the dark, and it was still raining. So, you know, maybe it was 8 p.m. or something like that. I saw so many possums on the road and nearly hit a couple of them. Thankfully, did not. But it made me wonder. All right, those animals that are tucked in safe and warm, when we get these drenching rains and big melting events, what happens to them underground?
Yeah, it's tough. Possums, raccoons, squirrels, this is the breeding season for them. And if they do get uncovered, they get wet, and then it gets cold again. That can certainly lead to hypothermia.
Yeah.
And believe me, it does happen in wildlife as well. It's why, for example, cold, wet springs are really bad for pheasant quail, for example, because the little ones get wet. They don't have any way of recovering, and they've got excess body fat to draw on. And by this time of the winter, that excess body fat that they build up in the fall in order to get through some of the tough times of the winter, it's pretty down to next to nothing. So drenching rains can be very, very difficult if you don't have good cover. That's why I say the squirrels, for example, you know, February, early March is the normal breeding season for tree squirrels, and depending on where you are in the state. But if they're living in a tree nest all winter, or one of those leaf nests out on the ends of a branch or something, those aren't terribly good insulation. And when they get wet, it's a tough one for them.
Sure. And with some of the incredibly strong winds we've had, right. I can imagine that's a challenging factor as well.
Yeah. And the ones that you were seeing crossing the roads, this is when the males are out checking out the females that they know were sleeping in certain areas. It's true of skunks. It's true of possums, raccoons. They're all out kind of checking each other out. And the males are going farther now to check out all the females in the area to see if they can breed with them. And so this is the time of year which a lot of, as you say, driving in the dark, you're going to see a lot of those critters around.
Sure. Well, how about flooding in the spring? We know that our odds for flooding are significantly higher this year than they are in some other years because of the snow mm-hmm. cover and the rapid way that it's melting
right.
this week.
Right.
So again, those cozy little tunnels under the ground, they can get filled up with water, right?
Yeah, they can. And that certainly will happen. And some will no doubt drown. My bigger concern is that most of the habitat, while we do have some, you know, large chunks of habitat, thanks in large part to public land and some private landowners that hold big chunks of mm-hmm. of habitat. Most of the habitat in the state of Iowa is along our rivers. And when those flood, certainly the animals have to get out of the floodplain, out of the flood zone. And then there's much less cover available for them. So certainly we lose a lot during that time. So there's, you know, flooding is not good for a lot of things, although except for the things in the river, it does help recharge that fishery. And so it's a very mixed bag. But in terms of non-aquatic critters in that flood zone, it's very tough on them.
All right. You are listening to Talk of Iowa. I'm with Jim Pease, wildlife biologist. We're talking about how this long, snowy winter has impacted wildlife in the state. And we'd love to hear from you. What are some of your observations? What have you seen in your yard or in the habitat near your home? You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And what signs of spring are you seeing as well? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And here's a question that I think leads well into our next topic, mm-hmm. Jim. This is from Daniel in Adel. He says, yesterday I saw what looked like juvenile squirrels in my yard. Is it possible these are from this year's crop?
It's possible.
But unlikely?
It's not real likely. Usually the first ones don't appear until late March at the earliest. And being in Adel, he's in central Iowa. It would be tough. I think we had some squirrels that got wet yesterday, and so that normally big fluffy tail and that long fur on their back looked pretty scrawny. So that may be what he saw, is just wet squirrels that looked a lot smaller. yeah, it's interesting to watch them come through various weather events, because we had squirrels out feeding yesterday in that rain, and it was a little tough on them, I'm sure.
Absolutely. All right. So that leads us to talk about mating season, and we're really in the thick of it, or even at the tail end of it right now for a lot of mammals, right?
And some birds. In fact, if you've taken a look at the Decora eagle cam, there are now three eggs. They're already sitting on eggs. The first one was laid back middle of February sometime. So they've been sitting on eggs. So have great horned owls. They've been sitting on eggs. And this month, the barred owls should be either on their nest or laying eggs very soon in the next week or so. So there are some things that are already at it. And certainly the things like, as I mentioned earlier, skunks and raccoons and possums are out looking for for love in all the right places, and they're trying to find them. And in fact, you can go out today on a sunny day, especially when I took my bird feeders. We have about, I don't know, 15 or 20 bird feeders out all around the house. And some of them seem to be particularly prone to being raided each night by a deer. And it's very expensive feed, so I've been taking about 7 or 8 of them in each night, right around dark. And it was interesting to watch how the deer were adapting, because the deer, as I would take them in, they would start to come earlier.
They're watching your schedule.
All right, if he's going to take them in at 5,
then we're coming at 4.
they were pretty smart about it, in fact. So, so it's really that's been a challenge. But anyway, as I was taking them back out this morning, putting them back up, there were birds singing, cardinals. In fact, cardinals are really they are persistent little buggers. I heard some male cardinals singing clear back in January. So they're always hopeful, I think, and setting, and you could hear some woodpeckers rapping. In fact, I heard one this morning going, "Yo, yo, I am the woodpecker up in the tree, hoping the females." Anyway, so I shouldn't go for a rapping career.
I don't think so. That's not your retirement
career. A new Hamilton, maybe?
Well, you work on it, and then let us know how
okay,
it goes.
All right.
Speaking of birds, I have a lot of questions about birds,
okay.
But Diane in Vinton does as well, and you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. Hello, Diane.
Hi. The red wings are usually back by now, red-winged blackbirds. And I'm wondering, how do they know to stay south? They go by temperature or daylight?
Yes. The answer is yes to both of them. Yeah. Certainly, day length is the trigger for birds to begin moving north. In fact, if you've been keeping track, some people keep track of when the sandhill cranes come back. And sandhill cranes have actually been in central Nebraska. There were, I think I checked last week, and they had 17,000 of them or something already. It's a small number for them, but and I've been hearing reports of some places in Iowa that there are a few sandhill cranes showing up, even though most of the waters are still frozen. There's some river waters that are open in places, so they're kind of it's a big chance they're taking. But red-winged blackbirds, like most birds, take the trigger from the length of day, but it's also weather patterns. So if they have scouts out, we've had a female, which usually arrived much later than the males, a female red-winged blackbird, much of the month of February, in fact, coming to our feeders, which is really strange. And so these might be early scouts. These might be and they kind of check things out. And we don't really know if there are, the scouts go back and tell the rest of the flock, hey, time to go. But I suspect we'll see red wings with this rain and heavy south winds that are going to bring 50-plus degree temperatures to Iowa this week and up into Wisconsin even this week. We'll see some red wings back within a very short period of time. So yes, they do.
You
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I could almost promise.
And it's how you define very short period of time that
right.
also
right.
these days.
Can I ask another
long.
Quick question?
Sure.
Sure.
What is the advantage? I mean, we have in this neighborhood some of those big groups of pheasants. You know, 50 more.
Sure.
What's the advantage of them all pumping up like that in the winter?
That's a great question. A lot of birds do this. In fact, if you spend much time in the woods in the winter, you'll see these mixed flocks of winter birds. You'll see downy woodpeckers and juncos and chickadees and nuthatches white-throated sparrows, all sort of moving around through the woods together. Often the chickadees are the beginning ones of that, they're sort of the bold little point guards, if you will, for the winter flocks. And there's a real advantage to that because that you've got more eyes searching for food, and they talk to one another. You can hear them coming and going through the woods. There's also an advantage to reducing predation because you have more eyes on the lookout for predators. I can tell you, for example, that a sharp-shinned hawk or a Cooper's hawk near feeders have a tough time of it because all the birds seem to communicate and they will freeze. And as long as they're not moving, the hawk doesn't have much of a chance of grabbing one out of the air. So they warn one another when a predator comes around. And the same is true with pheasants. In the wintertime, more of a chance of finding food. Perhaps just the numbers of birds also tend to expose some food, if they're all scratching at the ground and that. And other birds can take advantage of it. So from a population standpoint, there's a real advantage during the winter season when food is scarce in being a group rather than individuals.
All right. Well, Diane, thank you so much for your call, and you are welcome to join us, 866-780-9100. I have to ask you about robins, Jim, because we still, of course, say that, you know, robins are the first sign of spring, and then people get all excited when they see them in January, or
right. They
get worried when they see them in January. What is the deal with robins?
Well, you have to think about the whole population, and we always have some, and if you look at the Christmas bird counts across the Midwest, almost invariably, there are some robins during that late December period that hang around, and there are even a few that hang around through the winter. I think if we ask people to call in, we'd have dozens of our readers or of our listeners who would call in and say, "Well, I've had this or another bird at my feeder all winter. We've had a flicker. We've had a female red-winged blackbird. It's like these are weird." But if you think about it from a species standpoint, that's a really important thing because there are always sort of these individual outliers. And maybe as the climate changes or as the vegetation changes, whatever, all these changes allow a species then to adapt because you've got some that are always testing the margins of survivability. And maybe they're the ones that portend good things for the future for that species. So this is a way a species has of adapting. So we get these birds that come back much earlier than others, and some years they make it, and some years they don't. But that's a species that is able to adapt perhaps better than species that are so specialized and so dependent on a certain flower, a certain plant, whatever, that they can adapt very easily.
All right. So don't get too excited.
Right.
Just enjoy them.
Right. Exactly.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Doug is on the line in Mount Vernon. Hi, Doug.
Hello. Good morning. Jim, we have three nice brush piles because you told us to leave them on our
good speaker. All right.
Yeah, and the rabbits are okay and lots of birds. But in a swinging platform for sunflower seeds, a possum is up there swinging away and eating all the seeds. He climbs up the tree.
Yeah.
And then we have a heated old kennel with a pad in the bottom.
Oh.
The mama cat shares, and a possum goes into our shed and shares that.
So
we take them out.
Yeah.
Is there, I don't know, they're kind of fun to have around, but is there a danger of having too many possums, and do they cause any particular problem?
No, they don't, actually. Possums are great eaters of ticks. This is one thing that
benefits all of us.
Yeah, that's right. And
yeah,
ticks,
great.
Ticks are a vector for lots of diseases, and so they're a really good thing to have around. They also do not get rabies. They're one of the very few mammals that they're a marsupial, so they tend to be, for some reason, the virus doesn't impact them at all, so and they are not carriers in that sense. So rabies, they're fine to have around. They do have some peculiar behaviors, which tends to scare you. But I've seen lots of instances where they tend to share a kennel with cats, even a couple of small dogs. I've seen this occasionally. So if you have a heated pad in the kennel, boy, I'll bet the possums are just fine in there.
Now, of course, they will eat chickens.
Yes, they will. Yeah.
Although we've had many possums bed down in our chicken roosting area, and then we just remove them, and we haven't had any predation. So,
good.
That's we just
good.
See them and take them out.
Right, right. Yeah.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We have a lot of people on the phone, and you're welcome to join the conversation as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We will get to your phone call in just a few minutes. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with me today, and we're talking about how animals survive a harsh winter like this one, and we're also talking about some of the signs of spring. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me this hour, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We've been talking about our harsh winter and the signs of spring, how wildlife fared over the winter, and what we can expect to see in the next few weeks. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions and your observations. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go to John in Lost Nation. Hi, John.
Yeah, good morning. Jim, I'd like to have you set me straight on something. I thought that squirrels in the wintertime always were denned up in hollow trees. I thought the leaf nests were just used during the summertime.
Yeah, that's usually the case if there are enough hollow trees around for them. But if there is a lot of competition, those leaf nests get used through the winter. And they'll use all kinds of things. This is why we see squirrels in attics, squirrels in wood duck houses, squirrels everywhere. You know, they're searching for that place to den up into, where they'll spend several days to maybe even a couple of weeks sleeping it off, but then coming out during the winter to feed a little bit. So, yeah, they do den up in trees if they have those cavities available. But in some woods, they don't have them, and so they have to use those nests.
So we need rent control for squirrels.
Absolutely. actually, you can do, if you want, you can put up what a lot of people do, just like for bird houses. There are a lot of birds that are cavity nesters as well as squirrels, and on my wood duck houses, I take the covers off, the fronts off in the wintertime, and I put them back on. I'll put them back on this month because the wood ducks will be coming back very soon and looking for houses. Why do I take them off through the winter? So the squirrels don't occupy them, because they would, and then they're not available for the wood ducks in the spring. So I sort of evict them and let them use other things. But a lot of people put up squirrel houses, and certainly just like bird houses, squirrels will use just about anything you put up if you give them a chance.
Well, and something we've talked about on the show in the past, we tend to like to groom our lawns, and if a tree dies, we knock it down and
Absolutely.
Get it out of there. But if we would leave dead trees standing, that's a great habitat if we have that. A situation where we can do that, right?
Exactly.
And not just for squirrels.
Right. Not just for squirrels, because there are so many birds that are cavity nesters, chickadees, wrens, prothonotary warblers, nuthatches, owls, screech owls are cavity nesters. So barn owls and barn owls will both nest in cavities if they can. So it's those cavities, those dead trees, or human constructed houses are really critical for all kinds of species.
All right, let's go next to Kurt on the line in Muscatine. Hi, Kurt. Oh, Kurt, are you there? He is not. Okay. So let's go to Elsie in Des Moines. Hi, Elsie.
Good morning. This is Elsie Monty. I'm sorry I said my last name, but...
Oh, that's okay. What's your question?
My question is, and my observation, we have had a wily raccoon, and we have fixed the area. He comes in about 3 times, and he is so wily. He just either chews the area off where we have put wood or bends the area back where he has metal. This raccoon is so...
Comes into the house.
He makes a lot of noise, and I think he rolls walnuts around because I can hear this loud noise with the raccoon. And my grandchildren were here around Hanukkah time, and they saw him up in the, like a cubbyhole on the other side of the house. And we have some damage from him.
Yeah,
coming down the ceiling and where he lives. He actually lives in our house.
So,
and I'm at my wit's end.
Sure. Yeah, he's probably. You know what? I take it he's living up in the attic, for the most part, not in the house, not coming into your kitchen.
We have a very small attic. I mean, one part of the house we have a big area, but on the place where he is, it's like a place for storage. It's like I could put a door on this area and store stuff there.
Right.
And so he lives in that area, and I don't know if it's male or female. I'm just going to assume it's a male.
Because may very well be a female, but it could be either. Certainly, what you want to do, you certainly don't want them living in the house. I would suggest that you first of all, you have to determine where he's coming in. Secondly, block that off with new construction and or metal that is very well secured. Thirdly. Cut back the branches to the house so that he can't get jump to the roof from that or climb up the side. There are a number of things. I would suggest that you talk to Adam Janke. He is at 515-294-7429. He's the Iowa State University Extension Wildlife Specialist now. Adam will talk you through it. It's longer than we have time for. On this program, but certainly you don't want them living in there. And I would be, it very well may be a female, and you certainly don't want raccoons in there. They can do a lot of damage. So I'd give Adam a call and see if you can't, he can help talk you through the steps that you need to go through.
They are incredibly resourceful.
Yes, they are resourceful and strong.
Right,
and
being where they want to be. Over the years, I've heard advice about putting a bright light in a space where the raccoon likes to
music,
be because they don't want that, or turn on a radio, that kind of thing. But it does sound like, Elsie, you need some help.
Yeah, it does. So.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Elsie. Next up, Susan in Iowa City. Hi, Susan.
Hi. In the corner of my town lot here, I've got a large, really large fir tree, and it's got some limbs that have died over time on it, and it has trees on either side of it, so it doesn't get a lot of light. And anyway, long story short, these two squirrels were making a nest up in the top of it, and I ended up with this huge pile of small branches that they cut them off. I watched them at work.
Yeah.
And they did make a nest, but all this stuff fell down. It's a huge pile at the bottom, and they just kept doing it and doing it and doing it.
Well, squirrels do this, not just with fir branches, but with tree branches, oaks and maples and all kinds of leaves. In the springtime, actually into June, you'll see this. They they cut off a branch, and if it falls, you got to imagine that you're up out on a very small branch, hanging on for dear life, and biting off this branch. You don't necessarily want it to fall, but it does fall, and gee, it falls to the ground. Well, I'm not going to go down and get it. That makes me subject to predation from the local dog population and our cats or whatever, and so I'm going to cut another one. And so this happens. We'll see a lot of branches on the ground, as I say, clear into June from squirrels cutting these off, full of leaves or needles in this case, making a nest. And so it usually is on very mature trees and doesn't hurt the tree. It's sort of like pruning. On a fir tree, it may, depending on what they prune, it may cause some problems. But yeah, it's usually if the tree is mature, a little bit of pruning by squirrels doesn't harm the tree at all. Just in the spring, go out and rake up that that part beneath the tree, so that pile beneath the tree.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next, I think we need to do a whole show about squirrels.
Yeah, it sounds
next,
like...
another squirrel question from Pat in Story County. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for a great show. Yeah. And yeah, one more squirrel question. A good friend called from Red Rock. He was watching eagles, and the squirrels were getting underneath the eagles and then eating on the fins and things that the... that was being discarded. Have you ever heard of squirrels eating fish?
That would be a new one for me, Pat.
It's
certainly squirrels and other members of the that family will occasionally take animal matter. Ground squirrels are big predators on young birds and eggs. So maybe it sounds like that those squirrels have figured out how to make use of the fish as well. That's interesting. Wonder what they're getting out of a fin. You know, there's not a lot there.
Well, you know, the bone, he said it was just really essentially the leavings. But he said, have you ever heard of squirrels eating fish? And I hadn't. So it's a dire straits for...
Yeah, I think that's what it shows is that a tough winter. You know, they're making all the good that they can out of it. That's interesting. So, yeah, that's a new one.
Have a good spring.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. All right, a bird question. Brian's on the call on the line in Winterset. Hi, Brian.
Good morning, Charity and Jim. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. What's your question? Oh. I think he may have accidentally dropped himself off the line right at that second. So, Brian, call back, and we will answer your question.
Okay.
Richard's on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
How
are you today?
Good. What's your question?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I have black-bottom squirrels in my neighborhood. Have you ever heard of them? They're just like regular squirrels, but the bottom half of them are black.
Yeah, this is what's called a partial melanism. The color of the fur is one of the easiest and most changeable genes in a lot of mammals, and so you get everything from albinism, the absence of any pigment in the fur, to melanism, where you get all black squirrels, and you get partial melanism. You get leucistic, what are called leucistic squirrels, which are partially white.
And you have a lot of those in Ames.
Yeah, it varies a lot, and again this pelage color, it's again like one of those I was mentioning earlier about these early scouts. It's a way a species has of trying out things genetically. That to see if it works, and if it's an advantage to the species and those things survive, then evolution proceeds in that direction. If it's a disadvantage, albinism is a terrible disadvantage for a number of reasons. An all-white squirrel doesn't last very long usually, and because they're except in the wintertime when it might help them be more camouflaged. In the summertime, it's a distinct disadvantage for other reasons as well, but they usually get preyed upon very quickly. Melanism, on the other hand, tends to persist in a population if it's not a disadvantage. So you have some towns in Iowa where all the squirrels are black squirrels, are melanistic squirrels. They're still the same species, the gray squirrel, as usually happens, or the fox squirrel, but the pelage color changes, and so this partial melanism that you're describing is fairly common in a number of squirrel populations. So.
And so they can breed with the regular looking squirrels, and there won't be hybrids, or they're just they may look weird.
Yeah, it depends on the genetic makeup of the squirrel they're bred with. So melanism is a recessive trait, and so you have to have in order for it to be expressed in the next generation, you have to have the genes in both of them. So but it can if it's not a disadvantage, you may find increasingly that squirrels in that area may be have the black bottoms as you describe them. So
all right, yeah, bet. Thanks a lot for your call, Richard. And Brian called back in Winterset. Hi, Brian.
Hi, guys. Hi. Sorry about that.
No worries.
I must have been disconnected. A raccoon must have cut to my phone or something. That's the only thing I can think of. My question is, I'm an avid bird lover, and I love purple martins, but I can never seem to get them to come to my purple martin house. I just wondered if you had any recommendations. I put a house out every year. I keep it closed up.
Yeah.
You know, it just until the birds come and try to keep the sparrows out. But
right. Yeah. From what I've read, and I have not been successful either, but I haven't. I've talked to a specialist, and they tend to come back to places that they've been successful. And purple martins are not doing terribly well population-wise across the U.S., but in places where they are, they tend to persist in certain areas. But what he told me was that he tends to, if he puts out a new one where they've never been before, he tends to put out recordings of what their even song or their morning song, and that may attract one the first year or a pair or a couple of pairs the first year. And once they get established, then the colony will expand. But it takes some time, and he thinks that playing these recorded songs of theirs around that feeder will help attract them. So it's a good thing to try. It's fun to have them around. So.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot for your call. And we're nearly out of time, Jim, but if you want to have bird houses, if you want to have squirrel houses, if you want to do all of those kind of things, now is your moment, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's nesting season almost.
Absolutely. Now's the time to build those feeder or build those bird houses and get them up, clean out the old ones, clean up under those winter feeders as soon as the snow is gone. Gather that up and compost it or put it in the garbage, all that stuff underneath. If you don't do that, birds have a very high chance, particularly as that begins to sort of cook in the spring. They can get salmonella and die from that. So you want to clean up under the bird feeders, trim those trees and shrubs. Make sure you've got lots of cavities out there for hole nesting birds and mammals and get out there and enjoy spring. It's coming.
It's coming.
I swear it is.
Jim Pease, thank you so much.
My pleasure. I'll go to work on that new rap musical, Woodpecker, Evolution.
I'm waiting with bated breath.
Okay.
Wildlife biologist Jim Pease. Never miss a Talk of Iowa. You can always subscribe to our podcast. Just search for Talk of Iowa or listen on our website, iowapublicradio.org.